dragged her into the locker rooms, or cornered her in the cafeteria, or stalked her right into the girls' bathrooms, but I've come to the glorious realization that this thing between us, this intoxicating anticipation that keeps me awake when I throw myself into bed at 3 in the morning, is so much more entertaining than trying to quicken the situation along. She will come to me. She won't be able to resist. It's only a matter of time. And I have plenty of things to keep my mind occupied while I wait for her curiosity to get the better of her. Damiana.
When are you gonna give it up? You know we make sense. We're cut from the same cloth. Why would you want to settle for some prissy little prude when you already know how good I taste?
Damiana tasted like desperation. It coated my tongue and left an oily residue in my mouth that 3 days' worth of Listerine couldn't budge. I thought about sterilizing my junk and bleach after I was dumb enough to fuck her, but I figured my dick had already suffered enough and settled with a scalding hot shower instead. A master craftsman should take better care of his tools. I did complete a full profit and loss assessment the night I allowed Dami into the house and I screwed her over Pax's poker table. At the time, her neediness was something I deemed manageable, but that was after a bottle of vodka and 2 Percocet. It was also before I knew Elodie Stillwater even existed. And now I find the consequences of my little tryst with Wolf Hall's resident viper were not worth the 21 minutes of bare flesh and porn star approved moaning that she offered in exchange for a ride on my cock. Me. Let it go. Some mistakes aren't destined to be repeated. Damiana.
Mistake? You weren't calling it that when I swallowed your cum, motherfucker.
I jammed my phone into my back pocket, growling out loud. Crazy bitch isn't worth another megabyte of my data. I shouldn't have replied in the first place, but I figured there was a chance she'd walk away and let this thing go gracefully. Girls like Damiana never know when to give it up, though. They persist, and they persist, until they've thoroughly embarrassed themselves, and even then they won't fucking drop it. The land surrounding the house is a bog. It rained all week. An incessant downpour that only paused long enough for Dashiell to talk me into a race up Mount Castor, which I won. This morning's the first day that any of us have woken up to blue skies, and the pale, almost white dawn has made me unreasonably irritated. I liked the dense, angry cloud cover and the charged, threatening energy that's been hanging over Wolf Hall. It exacerbated the roiling tension that's been building between me and Elodie. It felt like that moment right before you come, when you hold your breath and you feel that pleasure mounting, and you're riding this wave that will crest over you any second. This morning's sunny, fresh beginning feels like that wave failed to crash, leaving me left unsatisfied and wanting. Using sex metaphors is a mistake. I just have to think the word and my mind goes overboard, painting graphic images of Elodie, naked and spread out for me. I haven't let myself imagine what it would feel like to fuck her. I can't imagine it. In my daydreams, I get as far as hovering over her with my dick in my hand, rubbing the tip against her pretty pink little pussy, and my mind just fucking blanks. She isn't a virgin. She's been fucked before, I can tell, but that doesn't matter to the cock-blocking bastard inside my head who keeps telling me that she's pure and my cock has no business being anywhere near her cunt. Pax whistles through his teeth as he pulls up through the black, sucking mud in front of the house at the wheel of his charger. He's chewing on a toothpick that he shuttles from one side of his mouth to the other, left to right, left to right, left to right.
You're gonna owe me a car wash, you know that, right? This baby was clean when I pulled out of the garage, and now look at her, she's fucking filthy.
If you took as much care in your presentation as you do in that car, people wouldn't mistake you for a vagrant all the time, Dashiell says in a sunny voice.
Fuck you, Lord Lovett.
When anyone else calls Dashiell by his full title, it's typically said with a certain amount of gravity and respect. When Pax uses our friend's full title, it sounds like he's chewing on wasps. Dashiell's impervious to Pax's foul moods, though. He gracefully slides himself into the front seat next to Pax, folding his body like a fucking dancer as he crams himself into the car. All of us are painfully aware of the fact that none of us should get along. Pax is the spikiest, angriest, poutiest guy I've ever met. The chip on his shoulder is glaringly obvious and kind of sad, really. Dashiell's spoiled rotten and so hopped up on Valium and Xanax that his world is fluffy and so mellow through his medicated rose-tinted lenses that he barely exists in the same plane of reality as us at all. And me. I'm the recluse. The pressure cooker. The guy who hardly speaks. Whose skin begins to itch if he has to say more than three sentences in public, in fact. Who hates almost everyone, and who finds the idea of having friends hanging around utterly repugnant. Pax and Dashiell somehow worked their way under my skin, though, until it felt normal that they were just there all the time, bickering and sniping at each other, roughhousing and calling on me to mediate their dumb, affectionate arguments. Now it would be weird if they weren't around, taking up space and irritating the shit out of me. Pax cackles like a deranged hyena as he peels out of the driveway and heads in the direction of the academy. Any other day, and the three of us would have run the 2 miles to Wolf Hall and wouldn't have broken a sweat, but it's Friday. We'll be burning down the mountain the moment the final bell of the day rings, and we won't be coming back until the early hours of Monday morning. How many people are going to be at this thing anyway? Pax grumbles. 500 and change. The creme de la creme of East Coast society. My father hasn't set foot on American soil for 3 years, so even the most pampered, blue-blooded snobs from the old money to the nouveau riche will be crawling out from under their rocks to pay tribute to the old man. Inwardly, I groan. 500 people, all crammed into the same ballroom, waiting for their turn to bow and scrape at the feet of a man most of them have never even fucking met. Sounds like pure fucking torture. Add in the fact that it's a black tie event, and I'm looking forward to tonight's charity dinner about as much as a root canal sans anesthetic. You're quiet back there, Dashiell accuses, looking over his shoulder at me where I'm sprawled out across the back seat of the Charger. God damn it, Jacoby, are you physically incapable of sitting up straight? He curves one of his dirty blonde eyebrows into a question mark. I don't think I've ever seen you utilize a chair correctly. You know you're supposed to bend in the middle and sit at a 90-degree angle, yes? Your posture's atrocious. My posture is directly correlated to my level of interest in my surroundings. Ouch, Pax fakes a sniffle of hurt. Sorry if we're boring you, Your Highness. Dashiell angles the rearview mirror to face him, using it to check his tie in the mirror. Ties are not mandatory at Wolf Hall. Dash wears it of his own volition, which is just fucking sick in my book. He's bent out of shape about the new girl, he says, his eyes meeting mine in the mirror. He's taking his time with this one. I'm not taking my time, I'm laying the groundwork. There's a difference. Dash ignores me. How long did it take him to sully Erica Judge when she first showed up? He asks Pax. 2 hours, 38 minutes, from setting eyes on her for the first time, deciding he wanted her, getting past the small talk, actually fucking her in the art room, and her parents turning around and coming back to get her. 2 hours and 38 fucking minutes, Pax crows. Living fucking legend. Pretty little Elodie's been here for 2 whole weeks now, and he's barely even looked at her. Waste of fresh meat, if you ask me. If you've changed your mind about our deal, man, we can trade back, you know. Corsica's one of my favorite places in the world, but that girl looks like she's got one of those perfect, tiny, neat little porn star pussies. I'd love to crack that oyster open and go hunting for the pearl. He holds up 2 fingers, flicking his tongue between them, making a grotesque slurping noise, and the back of my neck prickles. I kick the back of his headrest hard enough to make his skull bounce off the calfskin leather. Hey, what the fuck, man? Pax glares at me over his shoulder.
If you're having trouble getting your dick hard, I got plenty of meds that'll help you get the job done. Pull that shit again, though, and you can get out and fucking walk. Fine, I hiss. Fine, you want some dick pills? Fine, pull over. I'll get out and fucking walk. Don't be a little bitch, Jacoby. We're 500 feet away from the entrance. Stop the car, or I'll do more than kick a headrest, I purr in a flat, calm, perfectly amicable voice. Jesus Christ, Dash groans. Let him out before he blows like fucking Etna. There's no need to get so grouchy, you know, he tells me, spinning around in his chair. You like something about this girl. For some weird reason, you've decided she's the Morticia to your Gomez. There's no need to let your temporary insanity cause contention between the three of us, though, is there? The Charger's tires kick up hunks of gravel as Pax purposefully slams on the brakes. I open up the door and climb out into the cold. Dashiell offers me a winning smile. Take a minute to think about what really matters on your pilgrimage to school, won't you, fella? See you in 3 whole minutes. The Charger jumps its brakes, surging down the driveway towards the Academy's imposing building, and a thick cloud of exhaust fumes envelops me for a second, obscuring the dismal view up ahead. I wish it would fucking rain again. I wish the day, along with Dashiell's father's vexing charity dinner, was already over. I wish my smug fucking friends weren't right. My attention's inexplicably snagged on Elodie, and her appeal seems to grow on a daily goddamn basis. Under any other circumstances, I would have charmed the back teeth off of the girl and screwed the living shit out of her already. But this isn't about sex. It isn't not about sex, I suppose, but it's more about the quiet confidence the girl puts out. It's about her upbringing and the things she's experienced and the way she sees the world. I want to know what's going on inside her head. I want what any guy in my position would want. Her complete and unconditional surrender. Pax and Dashiell wait for me on the worn marble steps that lead up to the entrance of the academy. They're almost exactly the same height, and their builds are pretty similar too. That's where their similarities come to a grinding halt. Without me, the two men standing side by side in front of those lacquered black doors would probably despise each other with a burning intensity usually reserved for members of opposing religions. That little timeout fix your salty mood, princess? Pax asks. His eyes are still full of fury over the headrest incident. He won't forgive me until I apologize, and even then he might not absolve me of my heinous crime. That car is his pride and joy. I couldn't give a fuck. Today, I'm surrendering myself to my saturnine funk. It can fucking have me. Pax is gonna have to wait till tomorrow if he wants any sign of remorse out of me. Fridays are weird at Wolf Hall. None of our classes align. The three of us separated and banished to different wings of the school in a way that definitely seems planned. Harcourt made sure none of us Riot House boys were close enough to scheme up any disruptive plans for the weekend around any of the other students, which is usually annoying. I'm glad that I won't have to see either of them again until the end of the day, though. I just need... I don't know what the fuck I need. I'll be ready to leave at 6, I say, slapping a hand on each of the boys' shoulders as I pass them. See you back at the house. I yank open the heavy doors and walk inside the school, leaving them behind. Pax can't let me go without having the final word, though. You're acting like she's the pot of gold waiting for you at the end of the rainbow, man, but you're embarrassing yourself, Jacoby. She's just a girl. She's just a fucking girl.
In the dark, I stop drinking. He shoves the thin straw through the hole, goading me, trying to coax me into taking a sip. But I've made up my mind. Stubborn, stupid little bitch. Drink, damn it. Drink the fucking water. The human body can survive for weeks without food, so long as it has water. But if I don't drink, then maybe it won't take as long to fade away.
12. Elodie. Being resurrected from the dead has its benefits, most important of which, my friends have started messaging me again. I jog down the stairs, head buried in my phone, trying to read Ayala's most recent text without getting busted by a member of staff. I'm smirking, cheeks aching, totally entranced by the look of abject sorrow on Peter Horowitz's face. The guy even wore a suit to my memorial at Mary Magdalene's. Which is why I don't see the dark black smudge fast approaching down the hall on my left. Oh my God, Peter, 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 that's what you get for not asking me to the winter formal, is it? Whoa. The impact drives the wind right out of my lungs. I lunge, fingers grasping at thin air as I fall sideways, trying to close my hand around my cell phone. It's too late, though. The device spins end over end, moving too slowly as it plummets, and hits the polished marble floor in the entranceway with a heart-rending crack. My hip likely makes the same unnerving sound when I hit the floor, but I don't care about my damn hip. My phone. Jesus, if my phone's broken, I am totally fucked. Impressive, little E, a cool voice says above me. From my sprawling vantage point on the ground, I look up and find Ren standing over me. He isn't smiling. Not even his smug-ass, arrogant, I'm gonna make you fall in love with me smile. Nope. Today, his face looks like it was carved from granite. Very angry granite. His eyes are so glacial and distant that a physical chill runs down my spine. Pink and white polka dots. Didn't have you pegged as a cotton brief kind of girl, he says, arching an eyebrow as his gaze travels down my body. Oh my God. My skirt. Embarrassment claws at me as I rip the tartan material of my skirt down, covering my ass, which was, until a second ago, on display for all the world to see. Of course. Of course I picked out my ugliest underwear this morning, and of course I walked straight into Ren and flashed him my dowdy granny panties. Just fucking great. Seriously, just great. Ren's top lip curls upward. He looks disgusted as he steps over me. I get a close-up of the tread of his boots, 3 inches away from my nose, before I close my eyes, eaten alive by shame. Looks like your phone's just been decommissioned, Ren grunts. Too bad. Nearest repair place isn't for 50 miles. Should've looked where you were going. I bite the inside of my cheek until I taste blood. Propping myself up on my elbow, at last registering the dull ache in my side, I reach out for my iPhone and go to grab it before it can sustain any more damage. But Ren's foot sweeps out, kicking the device across the floor. It comes to a stop at the base of a plinth on which the copper bust of a balding Victorian-looking gentleman angrily sneers down at me. God, Jacoby, way to go. Didn't think it was possible for you to be even more of an asshole, but you just keep on leveling up. Karina arrives, dressed in a yellow and blue Wolf Hall tracksuit, her hair tied back in neat, tight braids. She grabs the phone first, presumably so Ren can't stomp on the damn thing and grind the screen to dust under the heel of his boot. She comes for me next, giving me a hand and pulling me to my feet. Fuck, my phone is toast. The screen isn't just cracked, it's dark and the backlight's completely out. This is just typical. The moment I finally get back in touch with Levi and Ayala, boom. With my laptop still out of commission and it taking an excessive amount of time to be replaced by Harcourt, my only means of communication with the outside world just died a death right before my eyes. Shit. Karina whispers, looking down at the defunct glass and metal. It's nothing more than a paperweight now.
God, I don't think that thing's salvageable.
It's gonna have to be. My father won't let me put a new phone on my credit card. No way. He just gave me this one. He...
Stupid fucking girl. Careless. Reckless. Thoughtless.
I flinch away from each word, bracing for a fist that doesn't come. When I look up, Ren's cold veneers cracked a little, and I glimpse something else. Something that looks like... concern?
Huh, yeah. Now I'm imagining things. I must have hit my head. I'd drive you to get it fixed tomorrow, Elle, but I promised I'd help organize a party in town. I can take you next weekend, though.
Elle doesn't suit you, Ren sneers.
Mind your own business, Jacoby. Go on, fuck off before I go tell Harcourt what you did.
His coal black eyebrows shoot up.
What I did? She plowed into me. I was minding my own business on my way to class. Just go, Karina snarls.
I want to look down at my phone. I instruct my nerves and muscles to obey, but they pointedly disregard the command. Instead, I stare at Ren as he shrugs, his gaze searing into my skin like a brand as he backs away down the corridor. Karina waits until he's out of earshot before she says anything else.
Arrogant prick, she seethes. I fucking hate that guy. I'd rather contract herpes than have to spend another minute at this school with him roaming around the halls like he owns the fucking place.
I snort out half-hearted laughter, slapping the busted phone into the palm of my hand and cringing mournfully when tiny fragments of glass rain down onto the floor at my feet.
Herpes, wow, you really must hate him.
Karina scowls. She takes me by the sleeve of my sweater and pulls me toward our science class, just as the bell announces our tardiness.
Like you wouldn't believe, Stillwater. Like you wouldn't fucking believe.
I glance up from my vegetable pesto pasta, surly and hostile. I must look hostile, too, the way I'm brandishing my fork like it's a murder weapon and I'm about to sink it into the neck of an unsuspecting passerby. The pale guy with the gray eyes standing on the other side of the table quails when our eyes meet. He seems to grow even paler as the seconds tick by, with neither of us saying anything. Poor guy. If I weren't in such a monster of a bad mood, I might feel sorry for him on account of his awkwardness. My mood being what it is, however, I have no pity for him. He's done this to himself. I'm putting out some blisteringly negative energy, and he made the decision to come over here and bother me. If he gets second-degree burns from my withering stare, then that's on him.
My name, it's Tom. Tom Petrov. That's my name. And I just...
He puffs out his cheeks, blinking rapidly, shaking his head. I notice that he's got a split lip. Looks fresh. Resetting himself, he steps forward and holds out his hand.
I'm Tom. Nice, to finally meet you. I just came over to introduce myself and to offer my services.
I release him from my tractor beam stare, spearing a piece of undercooked carrot onto my fork, ripping it from the tines with my front teeth. Tom jumps when I bite down and the carrot crunches loudly.
I'm having a bad day, Tom. I'm probably not going to be into the services you're so kindly offering.
Oh. Really? He fiddles, picking at his fingernails.
'Cause I heard Karina saying you broke your phone and you were gonna have to wait until next week to get it fixed, and I fix phones in my spare time, so...
My fork clatters down onto my lunch tray.
You fix phones, I say. You fix phones?
Tom nods. Screens, mostly. Sometimes I need to pull data, though. It can be tricky to get absolutely everything off a device. Did you drop it in water? No. It just hit the floor pretty hard. It won't even turn on. Tom nods. Is it brand new? He asks. If it's brand new and I replace the screen, it'll void the warranty. New to me, not brand new. Dad makes out like he's giving me one of his fucking kidneys every time he replaces my cell phone. But I know from the little scuffs and nicks that they've always had at least one owner before me. Usually his military aid. He's never been one to shell out money on something he can get for free. Then it's probably outside of his warranty anyway. You got nothing to lose by having me take a look at it. The dining hall's emptier than usual. People have been cooped up inside all week because of the rain. Now that it's finally stopped, they're braving the cold and taking their food outside. I love the quiet, and I'm thrilled that I'm not being stared at by 30 people I don't know the first thing about. But the thing I like about eating in the dining hall, the thing I like the best, Ren and his cronies are too good to eat in here with the common folk. Not once have I seen any of them disgrace this communal area with their presence, which means I'm safe here. I don't have to worry about snide quips or dirty looks or a face so fucking pretty and evil that it makes me want to weep. Ren would probably get a kick out of my inner conflict. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that he'd be rubbing his psychotic hands together if only he knew how many traitorous thoughts I have about him every single fucking day. But, Jesus, I've just spent a solid 20 seconds thinking about Ren when there's someone standing in front of me waiting for me to hold up my end of a conversation. What the fuck is wrong with me? Back to the matter at hand. Giving my full attention to Tom, I size him up. What happened to your lip, Tom? His eyes round out. Huh? I point my fork at him again. Your bottom lip, it's split wide open. He touches his fingers to his mouth like he was unaware of the injury. Oh, I was lying in bed this morning looking at Instagram and I dropped my phone. It hit me in the mouth. Stupid, right? You ever done that before? Hurts like a bitch. I clear my throat, giving him another once-over. Why are you being nice to me? We've never spoken before. He shifts from one foot to the other, clearing his throat. Well, I'd hate to crush any ideas you might have had about my philanthropic spirit, but, well, I get paid for this kind of work. I'm here on a scholarship, so... Oh, come on. I am such an asshole. It's easy to forget that not every single student at these schools is rolling in paper. Some schools do have scholarship students. Some students at places like Wolf Hall even have jobs and need to work the weekends to help support themselves. I feel like a grade-A asshole for completely disremembering people whose fathers haven't squirreled away millions and are required to pick up the slack. I sit up straight, pushing my food away. How much? 100 if it's just the screen, including parts. If it's one of the newer phones, I should have what I need here on campus. If not, I'll have to order the stuff online, which usually takes about a week to arrive. It's last year's model. So yeah, I should have you covered. And if the phone's fucked and you need to pull the data, that's an extra 30. It's not super hard. I could show you how to do it if you wanted to save money, but most people have me do it to save themselves some time. The data on my phone is minimal. No photos, no huge text strings that I'm sentimental over. It was clean when Colonel Stillwater gave it to me, so I'm not really concerned about that. Going radio silent after my friends have only just discovered I'm not dead, though, I'm fairly concerned about that. How quick could you get it back to me? Tom jerks. He looks surprised that I might actually be considering hiring him. Usually 3 days or so. But since you're new, I figure I could try and put a rush on it. Okay. Okay? Yeah. I can't get to Albany this weekend. I'd prefer not to have to wait until next weekend to get this taken care of, so sure, take it. I dig around in my bag until I locate the busted phone, and then I hold it out to Tom across the table. He swallows, relief dominating his features. Damn, the poor bastard must be really hard up for cash. He puts the phone in his pocket, backing away from the table. Okay, okay. Well, thanks. If I can get it back to you any quicker, I'll let you know.
13. Ren. Breathing. Blinking. Swallowing. Some skills are innate. We're born with them. Without them, we'd die the moment we come screaming into the world, vulnerable and covered in viscera. I feel like I was spat out of my mother's womb, capable of tying a half Windsor knot. It feels like a skill I came equipped with at birth. Because when you're born into a family like mine, and you're landed with the kind of father I was landed with, such talents are required if you hope to survive. I twist the black silk around on itself, tucking it up through the loop, feeding the length of material through the gap between the front of the knot, fiddling with it until it sits perfectly at the base of my throat. Who needs a fucking mirror for this shit? They're gonna think you're the waitstaff again, Dashiell states, holding the door to the ballroom open for me. They always do. A white shirt, that's all you'd need to differentiate yourself. White's totally acceptable, Ren. A white button-down wouldn't put a dent in the whole bad guy facade you've got going on in the slightest. I follow him into the politely seething crowd, flattening down my collar with a smooth flick of my wrist. I'm fine with what I'm wearing. Actually, I'm far from fine. This is only the second set of clothes I've been able to wear since my punishment ended, and some ripped jeans and my favorite ratty sweater would be much more preferable. This monkey suit is a fucking torture device. Dashiell's suit is classically cut and perfectly tailored. Pax's suit is a Tom Ford and retails for $20,000. Both of them look so content in their luxuriously fitted finery that I hate them a little for it. I'm happy as a pig in shit during the most awkward, miserable, wretched situations, but being restrained by a suit is something I've never handled well. If my father could see me now, he'd laugh his fucking ass off. Don't suppose any of the women at this thing are fair game, Pax observes, though it's more of a sly inquiry than a true observation. There's just enough of a lilt at the end of his statement to suggest that he's open to Dashiell correcting his assumption. Wise to his tricks, Dashiell snags a glass of champagne from a passing waiter holding a silver tray aloft in the air, his expression all business. Pax, if you so much as look at a single one of the women in this room tonight, I will personally castrate you and feed your testicles to my father's hunting dogs. Pax adopts a grumpy air as he too grabs himself a glass of champagne. People don't have hunting dogs in America, love it. Dashiell clinks his flute against the one in Pax's hand, cheersing him. Yes, they do, but either way, I'll happily fly back to Blighty with your balls in a mason jar, buddy. From the outside, Dash doesn't look like the kind of guy who'd deign himself to get his hands dirty. There's a soft, well-heeled vibe to him that has people betting against him in a fight. Looks can be, and are, very deceptive, though. Dashiell's as fierce as they come. Irrespective of his breeding and his education, he's not afraid to throw a fist or two. I've seen him shove his finger up a dude's nose and rip his nostril wide open in a brawl before. Guy really does not give a shit. Pax grumbles unintelligibly under his breath as he drains his drink in one. He doesn't doubt Dash's threat. He will steer clear of the women at tonight's event, but that doesn't mean he has to be happy about it. And don't drink too much either, Dash says, surveying the room. He looks cool and collected, but he's on edge, I can tell. He looks like he's casually taking in the chandeliers and the antique furniture and the handsome people dressed in all their regalia, but Lord Dashiell Lovett IV is looking for his father. It could be said that Dash is always looking for his father, for his approval, that is.
Remind me again why we agreed to come to this travesty, Pax growls. His eyes are steel gray tonight, the color of the angry North Sea.
Because you both owe me, Dash answers brightly, and because I asked you to, and because you're good friends who would never fuck over their mate.
Ugh. Doing things I don't want to do in order to make someone else happy is not in my nature. I need to send a text. I'll be right back, I mutter.
Don't wander too far, Jacoby. I need you back here in 10.
Smiling thinly, I sketch a mock bow. Back in 5. Outside, the night air is brittle in my lungs. The chatter from inside still rings in my ears as I become accustomed to the deafening silence. The manor house is on 100 acres, which might not be a lot of land in the grand scheme of things. Even Wolf Hall sits on 3 times that. But it's as though the dense woodland stretches on forever into the dark, and it feels like we're the only living things for 1,000 miles. Right on cue, an owl screeches in the distance, and the sound is eerie and piercing, as if the creature's indignant that I forgot about him. Grim as an undertaker, I pull out my phone and power it on, waiting for the screen to light up. I could fidget and tap at the display to hurry the process along, but that'd be ridiculous. Technology can't be expedited by willful human impatience, so I stare at the phone instead, grinding my teeth together as I wait for the illuminated Apple logo to blink out and the home screen to appear. There, finally. Working quickly to avoid the inundation of texts and notifications that begin to pour in, I open up a blank message and tap out a quick message. 1-819-3328-6582. Did you get it? Niceties aren't required here. Even if they were, the recipient of this text wouldn't be getting any. I place the phone down on the flat railing that skirts the balcony, and I turn back to face the building, blankly observing the people through the windows, wondering what they could all possibly be so happy about. The woman in the gold, sparkling dress has so much credit card debt she's about to lose her house. The guy with 3 fingers of whiskey in his cut glass tumbler, even though it's only 7:30 and we haven't even sat down to our 4-course dinner yet, has just been diagnosed with prostate cancer. At the back, near the bar, the couple fawning over each other and making a show of their affection as they talk to an elderly gentleman wearing a smoking jacket, have just filed for divorce. The dude by the piano fantasizes about touching his wife's 12-year-old daughter from her previous marriage. The bartender, smiling so professionally, so politely, as he makes cocktail after cocktail with flair, has been considering suicide for months. I glare at the lying, deceptive degenerates, despising everything that they are and everything they stand for. I could be wrong about the people I've just picked apart. It was all blind conjecture at best. But I know this set. They're expert fabricators and masters of their craft. The shiny veneers they present to the world are wafer thin and disintegrate like wet paper when inspected up close. Revolted, I turn back to my phone. Incoming message. 1-819-3328-6582. Yes. Me. Operational? 1-819-3328-6582. Yes. What should I do with it? Me. Leave it where we discussed.
Well, 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 what's this? Do my eyes deceive me? Ren Jacoby, alive and in the flesh.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Exhaling sharply down my nose, I turn the phone off and pocket it before I turn around. The girl emerging from the doorway isn't really a girl anymore. She's all woman, with her exaggerated curves and the seductive sway to her hips as she walks toward me. Her jet black hairs, long and wavy, fixed in place like some sort of 40s Hollywood starlet. The crimson color of her lipstick suits her perfectly. She looks like a pale, porcelain-skinned vampire who's just had her mouth clamped around someone's jugular and spilled her main course. In every way, she's perfect. In every way, I hate her. Detestable creature. Mercy. If I'd have known you were going to be here, I'd have torched the building to the ground and fled to Europe. Charming, as always, she purrs, sauntering to the balustrade. There's a 15-foot stretch of open space to my right, but of course the bitch comes and stands as close to me as humanly possible. The subtle scent of her perfume makes my stomach roll. I saw your illiterate friend inside, the one who looks like a murderer. I spent all of 3 seconds trying to calculate where you'd be before I came up with the answer. Yeah, you know me so well, Mercy. Excuse me, I have to get back inside. She doesn't listen, or else chooses not to hear me, talking over me as I step away. Can't I bum a smoke? Halting, I roll my eyes up at the clear night sky, resenting the moment I ever agreed to come to this fucking party. Under normal circumstances, I'd pin her up against the side of the building by her throat and tell her to go fuck herself, but the consequences would be disastrous. Mercy's the queen of theater, a lauded actress whose ability to cry on cue has already landed her 3 reasonably large speaking parts on Broadway. I lay a finger on her here at Lord Lovett's charity benefit for battered women, and she'll undertake the role of a lifetime. After a flood of tears and some smeared mascara, I'll be carted off in fucking handcuffs. No thanks. Grudgingly, I offer her the pack of smokes I had in my pocket, resigning myself to the fact that I'm going to be out here with her until she's finished with me. She places the cigarette against her lips, smiling knowingly as she snaps the catch on the small silver lighter she always carries around with her, lighting up. A thick fog of smoke spills down her nose, curling off into the chilly February air. You weren't in the city at Christmas. I drove all the way to the Upper East Side, only to find out you were off gallivanting without me in the Czech Republic. I give her an icy grin. Yeah, well, it's the only place that I'm safe from you. I know how much you loathe Prague. Sorry you had a wasted journey. Driving yourself has always made you feel poor, hasn't it? A vicious light sparks in her green eyes. We could have gone somewhere together, you know. The fireworks over Sydney Harbor on New Year's Eve were epic. You said you wanted to go there last year. Huh, last year. Many things have changed in the past 12 months. I'm sure you had a great time without me, Merce. You're milking that cigarette for all it's worth. Get it finished so I can go. Her smile morphs into a mirthless slash across her face. No need to be so belligerent all the time, Ren. Is it so bad that I might want to spend a couple of minutes with you? Am I really that awful? All that frowning and pouting is going to prematurely age you. And then what? And then I'll be hideous, and people will see me for who I truly am, I spit, sarcasm dripping from each word as I storm toward the door. I thought I could handle being out here with her, but I was wrong. She asked if she's really all that bad. Hell fucking yes, she is. She shouldn't even fucking be here. There's no way Dash's father sent her an invite, which means... No. You've got to be kidding me. I'm going to fucking kill him. You can't just keep storming off, Mercy calls after me. I always know where you are, Ren. Always. We'll be spending plenty of time together soon enough. I almost hesitate. I almost ask what the fuck that was supposed to mean, but I refuse to give her the satisfaction. Knowing Mercy as well as I do, she's fully explained her intentions with that carefully delivered, off-the-cuff remark. She's coming back to Wolf Hall. I find Dashiell talking to a balding man by the overloaded buffet table. Manners dictate that I should wait until he's finished his conversation, but I'm too steaming mad to observe social etiquette. Mercy? You invited Mercy? Dashiell stops talking, his mouth hanging open. He closes it, then opens it again, groping for something to say. Excuse me, I see my wife beckoning me, the old bald guy says, making a sharp exit. Dash looks like he'd do the same if he could.
Look, I just think that this thing with this new girl, you're not seeing things straight, Jacoby, and you seem to reset whenever Mercy's around, so I thought...
So you thought, I know what I'll do. I'll drag the poisonous cunt who ruined Ren's life across state lines. She's bound to make everything better.
God damn it, you're whispering. I don't like when you whisper. Means you're about to start smashing things. Can we please just talk about this later? Avoid her if you have to, but maybe the four of us can sit down after intentionally allowing that girl within a 200-mile radius of any of us is folly, and you know it. I am not sitting down with her.
As if magnetically drawn from the other side of the room by the promise of an argument, Pax appears with a napkin full of grilled shrimp in his hand. He looks devilish. Guess who I just ran into? I've already seen her, I snarl. Pax tosses a shrimp into his mouth, tail and all.
Mercy got hot, dude, and I'm talking hot.
This must be payback for kicking his headrest this morning.
Be very, very careful, I hiss.
What? It's just an observation. No need to get so bent out of shape.
Amused, he chews with his mouth open, watching me intently. I think he's waiting for me to throw a fist at him. Between his blatant attempt to rile me and Dash's utterly thoughtless attempt to smooth over troubled waters, I want to break both their goddamn necks. Fuck this, I'm out of here.
You can't leave. We came in one car, Dash says smugly.
Obviously, he thought about that. He knew I wasn't going to be able to jump in my own vehicle and bail if Pax brought the charger. Dash's trouble is that he isn't an immediate problem solver, though. I pat my phone, fury sizzling underneath my skin. Don't worry, I'll Uber.
For God's sake, Jacoby, don't be so melodramatic. Stay, have a drink, enjoy yourself.
Why he even bothers is a mystery. Dash knows that once my mind's made up, it's made up. He calls after me as I barge my way through the crowd toward the exit.
Come on, Jacoby, I thought twins were supposed to get on better than this.
14. Elodie. Come on, girl. You know you want to. I don't want to. I really don't. But Karina has a pleading look on her face that's making it hard to say no to her. I'm sorry. I'm just so tired. And a party? I won't know anyone apart from you. You'll know me. Press sings as she flies past my door, her hands full of a hot pink dress that will, 100%, clash horribly with her auburn hair. See? Karina crosses her arms, acting like she's already won this battle. And Rashida's gonna be there. Rashida's barely said more than 3 words to me since I got here. I burrow deeper into my covers, pulling my duvet up underneath my chin. It's so nice and warm in here. And anyway, I'm already in my pajamas. Don't lie, Stillwater. You're fully dressed under there, aren't you?
Ugh. Having to spend hours at a party, mocked and ridiculed by Riot House boys, does not sound like a good time, okay?
Ha! They don't attend parties in town. They're too pretentious and stuck up their own asses to mingle with Mountain Lakes kids. And anyway, I heard Pax telling Damiana that all 3 of them were heading to Boston for the weekend. Dash's father hosting some kind of charity thing. So you can forget about using them as an excuse right now. I scowl, sticking out my bottom lip. Look, I'm horrible in large social gatherings. I don't know how to talk to people. I'll only embarrass you, and then you won't want to be friends anymore. Garbage. We're cooped up here all week long, and you want to stay here all weekend too? Sorry, can't allow it. Come on, let's blow this pop stand. I am not going to be able to get out of this, I can tell. She is right, though. It doesn't make sense to cloister myself up in my room all weekend when we're forbidden from leaving during the week. Seems like some form of barbaric self-inflicted punishment
that I'm not entirely sure I deserve. Who's throwing this party again? She jumps up and down, clapping her hands together. Yay! Karina, no. I didn't agree to anything. You gotta tell me who's throwing the party. She shrugs her denim jacket off one shoulder, posing dramatically, grinning like a fiend. Does it even matter? There'll be booze, there'll be boys, there'll be music. Come on, Elle, throw on your shortest skirt and let's go. The mansion, a sleek masterpiece perched on a cliff edge overlooking the town's largest lake, is big enough to house an entire football team. And the guy who's throwing this party, Oscar, is the son of an ex-NFL player, so that kind of makes sense. It takes the entire drive down the mountain to figure out who knows Oscar, and if we've actually even been invited to this thing, by which time I've stopped caring and I'm ready for a beer. The party's in full swing when we walk through the front door, people dancing and whooping along to the loud, hectic bass line that's pumping through the professional speakers, shots being thrown back. Not one, but two beer pong games underway. And so many people I recognize that I immediately relax. Half of Wolf Hall is here. I might not be on first name terms with most of these guys, but I recognize them. And if they're allowed to be here, then I'm sure I am too. We need a bathroom pit stop, Karina declares, dragging me through the swell of dancing bodies. I apologize to people as I bump into them, but I'm met with friendly faces. No one seems to mind a little jostling. When Karina tracks down a restroom, she pulls me inside and slams the door, spinning around excitedly and leaning against it, laying her palms flat against the wood. So, I might not have mentioned this, but there's a guy. I hoist myself up to sit on the marble counter by the sink, pulling up my pantyhose, careful not to catch my fingernails on the sparkly, thin material. Of course there's a guy, I agree. Who is he? What's his name? Does he go to the academy? He's a freshman at the University of Albany. His name's Andre, and he's beautiful. He's friends with Oscar's older brother, and he promised he was gonna be here tonight. And we like this Andre guy? Karina nods enthusiastically. We like him a lot. He's smart, kind, funny, asks permission before he kisses me, which is actually kind of weird, but it's better than the alternative. And he looks like a young Andy Samberg, so there's also that. Andy Samberg? I have a very unique sense of taste, my friend. Haven't you already figured that out from the clothes? In fairness, she's wearing a pair of purple corduroy dungarees with four-leaf clover patches sewn all over them. The t-shirt she's wearing beneath the overalls has a deranged-looking cat printed across the front of it. Okay, I get it, I say laughing. But the only other guy I've known you to be interested in is, well, you know who. And he looks like a classic Greek statue. There's nothing quirky or weird about him at all. He's like vanilla ice cream. But the most expensive, most decadent, luxurious vanilla ice cream money can buy. Karina snorts, regarding herself in the mirror. She runs the tap, wetting her fingers and smoothing down her hair, which she's wearing au naturel tonight, big and beautiful and bouncy. That's the thing, though, isn't it? Everyone likes vanilla ice cream. You could be into pistachio, or licorice, or, I don't know, she laughs, fucking wasabi-flavored ice cream. But when a to-die-for vanilla ice cream comes along, you're still gonna want to give it a try. Because vanilla ice cream looks so good, and it tastes so good. And you think you know what you're getting. But then you realize that the milk's actually turned, and you've been poisoned, and...
She runs out of steam, shaking her head. I don't know. Vanilla ice cream turned out to be disgusting. What kind of ice cream do you think Andre is? I ask, watching as she applies some lip balm. Easy. He's a cilantro lime ice cream sandwich. She grins, biting down on her tongue playfully. A little offbeat, a little kooky, a little strange. But all of his weird parts somehow all work together. I like that about him. It's nice that she's this excited about a guy. I thought after her tears at the diner last weekend that it'd be a long time before she found anyone she might like to swoon over. And yet, here she is, swooning away. What kind of ice cream do you think Ren is? She asks, fluttering her eyelashes at me. That's a messed up question to ask. Why would I be thinking about what kind of ice cream that boy is? I don't know. You tell me. She sounds airy and unaffected, but I'm looking right at her face in the mirror. I can see the cautious expression she's trying to stave off. You look at him a lot. He looks at you a lot. I figured, what with all the negative tension floating around in the air, that something might be going on. Ren Jacoby is not ice cream. He's a lump of stale cheese smothered in rat poison, and I have absolutely no interest in sampling him. Karina laughs good-naturedly, clicking the lid onto her lip balm and dropping it back into her purse. All right, I'll believe you, girl. But just so you know, millions wouldn't. Oscar looks like a linebacker. He's 6'3" and almost as wide, and when he moves, everyone at the party moves with him, gravitating toward him like they're trapped in his orbit. You can hear him laugh, a rich, warm, booming sound, over the driving beat of the music, which he changes every minute or so, unable to commit to one song without having to switch it over to something else. I'm introduced to him on 4 separate occasions, and he doesn't remember me once. An impoliteness that's tempered by how happy he is when he learns my name all over again and hugs me like he means it. In between my run-ins with Oscar, Karina feeds me beer after beer, like the party's about to run out of booze any second. I'm no stranger to alcohol. I've tried every drink known to man. But admittedly, it's been a while. I'm buzzed by beer number 3 and drunk by the time I hit the bottom of cup number 5. At around 11, Karina turns bright pink and points out a guy across the living room that really does look like a young Andy Samberg. He beams at her the moment he sees her. And then that's it. My friend has eyes for no one but Andre. I don't begrudge her the time spent with her new cilantro lime ice cream sandwich. When you can find your yum, you gotta enjoy every second of it while you can. And anyways, I have Presley to keep me company. People tend to overlook the one with the skinhead, she says, rocking beside me on her chair. She's drunk, but still making sense, I think. Maybe we've hit that perfect equilibrium where she's so drunk that she's not making sense, and I'm so drunk that her mumbled words and fuzzy statements actually sound like real words. People think he's stupid because he's a model, but I had to work with him on a science project last year, and he was really smart. Really, really, really smart. I pass her the beer we're sharing. Really, really, really smart? Yes, she says, snickering. Really, 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 really. She forgets what she was going to say. Anyway, his name is Pax. That means peace in Latin. Did you know that? I did know that. Ooh, look at you, clever little Elodie.
I like your name. What does Elodie mean? I hiccup loudly, trying to focus on Presley's pretty freckled face. But there are currently three of her swaying about all over the place, and I'm not sure which version of her I'm supposed to be addressing. It means foreign riches, I tell the middle Presley. In French, it was my mom's middle name. It's really pretty, Pressler's. Really, 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 She realizes what she's doing and bursts out laughing. God, at least you weren't named after a fat man in a wig who fucking died sitting on the toilet while simultaneously, she struggles with this one, eating a hamburger and taking a giant shit. I don't think that was ever proven, I sputter, trying not to laugh. How am I supposed to keep a straight face when she's coming up with this stuff? God, I'm really fucked up, she says, wobbling as she tries to get to her feet. I think I need a speed walk around the grounds to wake up. You ever seen those speed walkers? They look fucking ridiculous, don't they? Hey! Oh, hey! Tom! Look, Elle, it's Tom from the Academy. He hasn't seen us. Come on, let's go scare the shit out of him. Press, I think I'd rather just stay here. It's too late, though. She has me by the wrist and she's dragging me up onto my feet. Before I know it, we're on the other side of Oscar's living room, and we're standing behind Tom, who's telling a very animated story to some of his friends. And then he was like leaning his forearm against my throat, looking at me like he was gonna fucking kill me, and I couldn't fucking breathe. And I was like, all right, all right, I'll fucking do it. Just get the fuck off me, man. The guy's unhinged, tall guy with glasses says. I heard he stabbed one of the teachers during spring break last year. Don't be stupid, the only girl in Tom's little group says. The ends of her bright blonde hair have been dyed purple. She rolls her eyes. If one of the teachers got stabbed, don't you think we'd know about it? And why the hell would they let him continue attending the academy if he hurt one of the faculty? You should really run this shit through a filter before you let it spew out of your mouth, Clay. You know the rule. We fact-check everything before we announce it as gospel.
Relax, Jim. Jesus, he's just telling us what he heard,
a short guy breaking apart a brownie with his fingers says. He tips back his head and drops some of the gooey chocolate cake into his mouth. Erg, none of you are listening to me. Tom holds his hands up, exasperated. Jacoby threatened to fucking kill me. And if I don't get that girl's phone back by the end of tomorrow, she's gonna know something's up. She'll probably report me to Harcourt. I'll get expelled and my grandfather will kill me and I end up dead in either scenario. So I'd really like some fucking help, please, cause I'm kind of freaking out right now and... The kid eating the brownie swallows.
Hey, Tom?
What, Elliot? What?
What's this girl look like? The one with the phone?
I don't know. She's hot. Short, petite, blonde hair. She has nice eyes. What the fuck does that matter?
Elliot grins humorlessly. 'Cause I'm pretty sure she's standing behind you. And she looks pissed, man.
Tom whips around like he's just been poked up the ass with a cattle prod. Oh, shit. Elodie. Yeah, it's Elodie. How you doing? Are you, He rubs frantically at the back of his neck. Are you enjoying the party?
I was enjoying the party. Now I am not. Now I'm the embodiment of rage. I'm a blistering